uranium in their blood and needed to be hospitalized. They said delaying the medical trip of Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat is an infringement on their rights.
The Constitution of Nigeria has given every individual a right to express, right of movement, right to medication, right of everything, socially. So if right has been given to every individual citizen of the country, why is Sheikh being deprived?
A Kaduna High Court had freed Sheikh Zazaki and his wife Zinat since July 28, 2021. The Islamic cleric and his wife had dragged the Nigerian government to court over its refusal to release their passports to go for medical treatment abroad. Danjuma Abdullahi, Abuja.
Already struggling with the cost of living crisis, ordinary Europeans are now feeling the pinch at the pump, with the conflict in Ukraine pushing up the already high food and fuel prices. As plans to phase out oil imports from Russia are drawn up, the ripple effects of the Ukraine crisis are being felt across the continent.
Here in London, people are feeling the economic cost of the ongoing military conflict in Ukraine at the gas pump. Prices have been rising steadily since the start of the year and have now hit a record high. And what that means is that it's going to have a knock-on effect on the cost of transporting goods and, by extension, on the already rising cost of living.
Russia is the world's second largest exporter of oil. The EU imports 27% of its oil from Russia, the UK 11%, and the US just 8%. Which is why Europe will feel the effect of the bans far more acutely than the US. The EU also plans to slash its dependency on Russian gas by two-thirds this year. That's 26% of their supply.
It's hard, bloody hard, but it's possible if we're willing to go further and faster than we've done before.
But to make it possible, experts say the Europeans will have to make difficult compromises.
For the new government in Germany actually now saying, actually, we're going to bring back nuclear. Well, that was one of the key things, that they were going to get rid of nuclear completely, very quickly indeed. Then also coal, getting rid of the coal-burning power stations, and particularly those from maybe the using Polish coal, brown coal, which is incredibly dirty.
But could all this have been prevented? While the U.S. and Europe blame Russia's ongoing military offensive in Ukraine for the soaring energy costs, some experts say it's a crisis that could have been averted.
One of the great things about international affairs is to understand not just what you want to achieve, but what the other side wants to achieve. And where's the middle path? Russia generally would want to have a working relationship to protect its security, to make sure its confidence is there. And you know, instead of necessarily having people who are American allies literally a few hundred miles away from your capital, that's something they're not used to. So really understand their nervousness, now try and work out how to deal with it. But we've left it too late.
The new plans will mean less oil revenues for Russia and a faster transition to cleaner energy. But what it also means is a higher risk of inflation and recession across the continent. Saeed Pourriza, London.
Iran has launched its futures contracts for the first time in the history of its energy exchange market. The futures contracts were launched for the naphtha and methanol trades. According to experts, futures are some very important instruments for the market balance. If other energy carriers, and especially oil, gas, and petrochemical companies, join Iran's energy exchange on futures platform, Iran's crude oil and gas is capable enough to be turned into a benchmark for pricing in the region.
As Iran has the largest oil and gas reserves in the world, the pricing benchmark for our gas and oil should not be elsewhere. The fact is that we should have our own pricing reference for our natural gas in the region. We hope that with the launch of futures and cooperation of all companies in the field of oil and gas, such a thing will happen.
Futures are some very important instruments for the market balance, while they are also some strong hedging tools. They provide investment opportunities for those who are seeking the amount of profit more than they can earn in the normal market deals.
Futures contracts are financial contracts obligating the buyer to purchase an asset or the seller to sell an asset at a predetermined date and price in the future.
The launch of futures trade markets at Taiwan's energy exchange will contribute to transparency and the predictability of Taiwan's economy. Salman Kujiri, Tehran.
The Islamic Jihad movement held a national conference for women in the Gaza Strip on the occasion of International Women's Day. The conference, titled Woman is the Icon of Resistance, highlighted the role of Palestinian women in fighting the Israeli occupation and their struggle for freedom and justice. Palestinian women in the Gaza Strip paid a heavy toll during Israel's war on coastal enclave last year. According to human rights groups, the Israeli regime killed 60 women and 22 children in 2021.
We are supporting our women. We called the international, we addressed the international human rights to support our women, asking the international committee to protect the women, to protect the children, to stop the occupation forces against the women in Palestine.
Addressing the conference through satellite transmission, Islamic Jihad Secretary General Dr. Ziad Nakhala praised the role of Palestinian women and their struggle against the Israeli regime for more than seven decades.
Palestinian women will not allow anyone to stop her resistance, consider it to be a red line. Palestinian women share military and political struggle with men. Palestinian women has given a lot for her homeland and abroad.
Conference attendees discussed ways of developing new strategies for women to confront the Israeli regime and its illegal practices, especially against women.
Palestinian women today meeting in Gaza to discuss about the role for women, for Palestinian women, and to discuss issues about how to defend the Palestinian in Palestine.
The annual event also tackled ways of bringing international attention to the plight of Palestinian women.
Palestinian women say that they will continue their struggle against the Israeli regime until the liberation of Al-Quds and all of Palestine. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
United States Secretary of State Antony Blinken wrapped up a visit to the leaders of six European nations, plus a visit with the European Union and Israel's foreign minister, with a closed-door meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron. Washington has just announced a ban on Russian fossil fuels, but Blinken has apparently not convinced the European Union to immediately sever energy ties with their primary supplier. Russia announced they would cut its oil supplies to Europe if they introduced energy sanctions, which would have a devastating economic impact, perhaps globally. In what many say is an effort to avoid peace and increase the likelihood of a major war, Blinken recently announced that NATO members can send fighter jets to Ukraine. The U.S. and Europe have already provided significant military aid to Ukraine and imposed sanctions so potentially sweeping that Russian Federation President Vladimir Putin recently said they were, quote, like a war.
France is not directly concerned in this conflict, and yet they've already overdone it. When their foreign minister declared an all-out economic and financial war against Russia, that is an act of war. However, there's no economic coherence here because Europe completely depends on Russia for gas, petrol, and titanium, while the loss of export sales to Russia would be a catastrophe for European agriculture.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky recently announced that he, quote, understood that NATO is not prepared to accept Ukraine, end quote, which appears to be a concession to one of Russia's primary demands to end its military operation. The risk of expanding the conflict is a major concern, and with Washington giving Russia a cold shoulder since their offensive, Macron has served as the West's primary mediator with Moscow.
Macron has failed in his mediations because he and Germany have not been able to convince Ukraine to respect the Minsk agreements. If Macron had been able to convince Ukraine of this, then things could have been quite different. France should have been able to achieve this, but the United States obviously didn't want it.
Since 2014, some 14,000 people have been killed in Ukraine. Russia's offensive on February 24th has produced almost 500 civilian deaths and nearly 2 million refugees, according to the United Nations.
In recent years, many politicians have argued that the European Union is necessary in order to have peace on the continent. However, forming an EU army, sending arms within Europe, and waging a sanctions war, which is sure to hurt the Russian people, doesn't seem peaceful to many. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Members of Iran's Assembly of Experts have held their second biannual meeting this year. That's the ninth official session of the current assembly, which was elected in 2016.
Members of the Assembly of Experts convene twice a year to review the latest domestic and global issues. This time, Ebrahim Raisi, who's one of the Assembly's members, has participated as Iran's president.
Raisi was invited to highlight his administration's achievements and review the challenges it faces. During the session, Chairman of the Assembly of Experts, Ahmad Jannati, urged President Raisi to take practical steps to address the economic problems of Iranians and improve their livelihood.
We need to improve the livelihood of the less privileged strata. The Honorable President must take steps to make this happen. I hope other members of this cabinet follow suit and help the needy have a better life. This is the least we should do as a duty.
The Assembly of Experts was established in 1983, almost 4 years after the victory of the Islamic Revolution. Its main task is to monitor the performance of the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution. The experts should also elect a new leader in the event of the demise, resignation, or dismissal of the current leader.
The Assembly of Experts was the entity that elected Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei as the new leader after Imam Khomeini passed away in 1988. Not only does it supervise the performance of the leader, but it plays a crucial role in protecting the political establishment.
The Assembly of Experts is currently a body of 88 Islamic jurists. The entity consists of a leadership council and six committees. Members are elected by direct public vote for an 8-year term. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Palestinians rallied on Monday in front of the Red Cross office in Gaza to drum up support for thousands of prisoners held in Israeli jails. Their solidarity action comes as around 450 administrative detainees have been refusing to show up for their military court hearings for the third month in a row. Administrative detainees are denied due process, and their detention orders can be renewed for indefinite periods of time.
For the third month, the Palestinian administrative detainees are boycotting the Israeli military courts in order to protest the administrative detention. And now the Palestinian detainees need all kinds of support by the Palestinian community and the international community.
Palestinian prisoners are also subject to torture and psychological pressure by the Israeli prison authorities, including daily raids and solitary confinement. Currently, some 5,000 Palestinians are languishing inside Israeli jails, including minors and women.
The Israeli administration, they conducted series of attacks and aggression against prisoners, especially women. This gathering asking international community to put pressure to Israeli government in order to facilitate their rights and stop the aggression against Palestinian prisoners.
Palestinian prisoners regularly stage hunger strikes in protest against both the administrative detention policy and harsh detention conditions. Prisoners' advocacy groups have raised the alarm over the inhumane conditions inside Israeli jails.
Nowadays, the situation is going to explode inside Israeli prisons because of the Israeli measures that aimed to break the will of Palestinian detainees and to confiscate their rights.
Experts say Palestinian prisoners will continue to suffer inside Israeli jails as long as the international community keeps turning a blind eye to Tel Aviv's violations of their rights.
Statistics by human rights groups show that the Israeli regime has arrested over 1 million Palestinians since 1967. Ashraf Shana, Gaza.
Joint statement by the diplomatic missions of the Western countries in Islamabad has created an uproar in Pakistan. The statement posted on the social media platforms presses Pakistan to condemn Russia.
The statement was signed by the envoys of European countries and endorsed by the US Embassy in Islamabad.
The move by the Western diplomatic missions here has drawn strong reaction from the Pakistani government. The Foreign Office has summoned the envoys of the Western countries to tell them that issuing public statements against the host country is not in line with the diplomatic protocols.
On Sunday, Prime Minister Imran Khan doubled down on the European ambassadors and made it clear that Pakistan is not their slave.
I want to ask the European ambassadors, did you write such a letter to India? What do you think of us? Are we your slaves? That whatever you say, we will do.
Pakistan has maintained a fine balance in the ongoing conflict between Russia and the West over Ukraine. The reason Pakistan refused to condemn Russia stems from its growing ties with Moscow.
But the only thing that I can say from Pakistan's government perspective that Pakistan wants de-escalation. Honestly, Pakistan wants end of the war or end of bombing or end of aggression anywhere for that matter in the world.
Pakistan has remained in the Western camp for decades, but now wants to diversify its foreign policy options. It was because of this reason that despite pressure from the West, Pakistan abstained from the voting on a resolution against Russia at the UN General Assembly session. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en. On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary. O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. and I observe the acts of obedience to you for the hope of your rewards. So, bless Muhammad, the best of thy creation, the summoner to thy truth. Exalt me with thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely, thou art the all-forgiving, the all-compassionate.
Sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. The Vienna talks between Iran and the P4+1 group of countries over the revival of the JCPOA have been paused at the request of the EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, who tweeted that a final text is essentially ready and on the table and proposed a temporary halt to the talks due to what he called external factors. Iran says the pause can provide a momentum for resolving the remaining issues and a final return to the negotiations, adding that no external factor can affect the parties' joint will to go forward for a collective agreement. Iran has time and again stressed that Washington needs to make a political decision to ensure that Tehran's basic demands are met. To get further details on the decision by the EU foreign policy chief, we're now joined by our correspondent, Homa Lezgi, who's with us from the Austrian capital, Vienna. Homa, what does this pause mean?
Yes, Paradio. So today I think we heard a lot. We heard the comments from the EU coordinator, Enrique Mora, when he addressed reporters and delivered a kind of statement saying, again, that this is because of external factors, as Mr. Josep Borrell said, and we are going into these pause with a hope that we can come back, he said, within days. That's the hope, which was also voiced by the Chinese ambassador when he talked to the media, that they can come back and get this done. Now, what we're hearing is I'd like to point out the comment made by the Russian ambassador, Mikhail Ulyanov. He said that he wants to make it clear that Russia is not the sole party on whose decision the conclusion of the talks depends. He said that he wants to stress on this fact that there are lots of players involved here. It's not just Russia. Russia is only one of the participants of these negotiations. There are the interests of various parties, and there are issues that are related specifically between Iran and the U.S. and fall into that context and need to be settled between them. And he was saying, basically, you should not assume that the future or fate of these talks and their conclusion depend solely on Russia and Russia's decisions. I'd just like to also point out to a tweet from the UK representative, lead delegate in the talks. She said that she believes a fair and comprehensive deal is on the table, is ready for conclusion, and that the Iran and the US have worked hard to resolve their issues, and that the E3, in her words, are ready to conclude these talks now. However, the external factors, in her words, must be resolved in the next few days if we want to make that happen. But this is the position that the Europeans have been giving, both, I think, Americans in various briefings that they've had, and also sources close to the Iranian team, however, have been saying that there are still unresolved issues between Iran and America when it comes to the scope of sanctions that need to be removed, and some other issues related to, for instance, economic guarantees, etc. What we are hearing, though, that despite these differences, they're not difficult to overcome. They can be overcome quickly if this pause creates a time for various parties to have the necessary consultations for the Russians, Americans, and the Iranians specifically to come up with the decisions that need to be taken. Then the negotiations can conclude successfully.
All right, thanks a lot. Homa Lezgi joining us from the Austrian capital, Vienna. Well, joining us for this edition of The Spotlight, we have journalist Abbas Aslani, who's with us also from the Austrian capital, Vienna. And we have journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bosnich, who's joining us from Belgrade.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Let's start off with Mr. Abbas Aslani in Vienna. Mr. Aslani, it's great to have you with us. The EU foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, suggested a temporary halt to the talks due to what he called external factors, one being Russia requesting guarantees for civilian nuclear projects related to the JCPOA that they will not be affected by Washington sanctions on Moscow. How do you perceive this recess in the negotiations? And how critical of a phase have the revival negotiations reached right now?
Well, thank you for having me. In fact, the talks have reached a stage which is very close to an agreement, but they have not been able to make it. In order to finalize the text of an agreement, it seems that all the participants to the deal need to somehow find a common ground. You know, there are two sets of issues. One is that the U.S. has been lengthening the process by not, let's say, trying to abide by the lifting of the sanctions that it is supposed to lift in accordance with the JCPOA. Yesterday, Iranian foreign minister was referring to, let's say, the different and frequent changes in the messages that the U.S. has been communicating to Iran via the Joint Commission Coordinator, and they have been arguing that due to the public opinion pressure in the United States, they cannot make the decision on lifting the sanctions. So in that case, Iran will not have motivation to return to the full compliance with the nuclear deal, because Iran's, let's say, main reason to make the deal has been to economically benefit from the JCPOA. So one issue is related to the sanctions and the scope of sanctions and the quality of lifting those sanctions as well. As one senior European diplomat put forth today, was that they will have some further discussions and negotiations over the picture of how those sanctions need to be lifted. But on the other hand, recently we have been hearing some, let's say, remarks by Russian officials on receiving a written guarantee from the Western parties that the current and future EU and US sanctions, meaning over Ukraine, will not impact Russia's relations with Iran. That's why we are hearing that the European officials, as well as the American ones, they are referring to that demand as an external factor. They say that the Russian position is irrelevant to the JCPOA, and they cannot, let's say, ensure that the Iran's bilateral relations with other countries or, let's say, can, let's say, be guaranteed. But, you know, the Russian argument that the other sanctions must not impact, let's say, relations with Iran when it comes to economy or nuclear cooperation, that's correct. But also on the other side, in parallel, we have the U.S., let's say, lack of decision on lifting the sanctions. What is important that is to return to the, let's say, terms of the deal based on the text of the original deal, as well as the United Nations Security Council's Resolution 2231. Sure. And I think this can be maybe the perspective that has been important to Iran.
Let's bring in Mr. John Bosnich, who's joining us from Belgrade. Mr. Bosnich, Iran says that Russia's request can bring a new topic to the agenda of the talks as an unanticipated component, but the main obstacle to the negotiations is the lack of a U.S. political decision to accept Iran's demands. What do you think is the main obstacle in the way of an agreement?
The U.S. government is in a state of semi-paralysis now because of the conflict in Ukraine, and this is perhaps the best example of where Biden's difficulty in keeping up to date on government affairs is crippling the U.S. operations. I would expect that during the crisis in Ukraine, the United States is going to try to buy for time, because the last thing they want to do now is add another confrontation and another problem to their plate. I expect that you should see the United States delegation delaying, trying to buy time, and trying to slow down the entire process for at least the next 3 weeks.
Mr. Aslani, a major question here is what assurances can be given that another U.S. administration doesn't come along and leave the deal again, just like the Donald Trump administration did, basically asking, should the U.S. or can the U.S. be trusted?
Well, there have been different discussions on different types of guarantees that can be given to Iran. However, the American administration have been resisting, let's say, against giving those guarantees. Earlier discussions were made on, let's say, presenting political, let's say, guarantees, or we have also had discussions on economic guarantees as well as the legal ones. For example, there have been examples on, let's say, what the Congress can do. It's somehow difficult to imagine that they would give a guarantee, but on economic ones, that if in case, let's say, any U.S. administration leaves the deal, the companies will have a period of time to be able to somehow to prepare their departure, or let's say giving some announcements politically that they won't leave the deal. But one of the most important, I can say, guarantees can be inherent guarantees, which is in fact the reversibility of Iran's nuclear potential and program. Meaning that can work as a potential leverage, that in case any party, most specifically the United States, leaves the deal, Iran can return and resume its nuclear activities at the earliest time and as quick as possible. So this could be more, practical guarantee. There has been discussions on that. I mean, some relative progress has been made. But it seems that, you know, the Americans, you know, they have not been able to make, let's say, serious actions vis-a-vis this issue. We have to see till the end that to see what is the, let's say, actual guarantees that are provided by a likely agreement. But I would say that the inherent guarantee can be the most important one, which can be followed by, or let's say, accompanied by economic guarantees as well as the political one.
John Bosnich, an analyst we spoke to here on Press TV, said that Tehran believes the U.S. wants to keep parts of the sanctions in place in order to use them as leverage to draw concessions from Iran over its regional influence and military capabilities. Do you see it in that light as well?
Absolutely. That is standard U.S. policy. The United States considers itself to be literally above the law. And when they enter into negotiations on any topic, they then have a kind of a strategy meeting in Washington in which they determine what other factors could be brought to bear. And that covers all forms of trade, that covers transportation, that covers regional communications and information transfer. So Iran has been targeted for years by the United States. The United States does not want to be friends with Iran, and the reason for this is because the U.S. policy towards Iran is largely governed by the Israel lobby in Washington. And Israel has as an objective the sidelining and the weakening of Iran. If Iran is allowed to have a good, solid nuclear energy program, it works against the interests of Israel as a regional hegemon, and therefore against the interests of America as the global hegemon.
Mr. Aslani, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, says that Iran will not budge over its regional presence or its nuclear progress vis-a-vis the United States or any other power simply to protect itself against sanctions. If you may, unpack those comments for us.
Well, Iran's influence or presence in the region has been a source of power for the country, and this power has, let's say, created a deterrence for the country in order to deter some likely invasions against Iran, as well as it has, if that has deterred any invasions against the country, it means that it has been a cause for established peace and security in the region as well. Because if there is any war in the region, this can, let's say, bring damages to other parts of the region. This can be a fire. This can put region maybe on fire. So if these, let's say, potentials and these this deterrence has stopped a likely war, so this is in benefit of Iran, and this is also, let's say, this can benefit the region as well. On the other hand, you know, it is said that the U.S. as well as the West has been trying all along, from the past till now, to keep some sanctions in place in order to not to let Iran to benefit from the lifting of the sanctions. So the benefit Iran can enjoy can be partial. So those remaining sanctions or the structure of the sanctions, if kept in place, they can be used as a leverage for future negotiations or talks on region, on Iran's missile capability, and other areas as well. So that's why if Iran, let's say, makes compromises on its regional issues, on its defense capabilities, this will empty Iran's hands in any negotiations, even in the nuclear negotiations that are taking place. So Iran wants to make sure that it has its own tools in its foreign policy toolbox, as well as, let's say, the power to protect itself against the foreign pressure. So that's why Iranian leader, I think, is emphasizing on the importance of the Iran's presence in the region as a source of national power and as a source of, let's say, deterrence in the region. And this can be a source for peace and stability as well for Iran and the region itself.
John Bosnich, on that note, according to the leader, the U.S. propositions that Iran needs to reduce its defense power as to not provoke the enemies are extremely naive and amateurish. He said such ideas have been raised in the past but turned down every time. Ayatollah Khamenei said it would be a grave mistake for Iran to back down on its stance and it would hurt Tehran's political power. The question is, why is such a request even on the table from the United States and its allies?
That's very simple. The United States is the global bully. They pretend to be the global policeman, but actually they are a global bully. And the United States operates a protection racket, where if you come to terms with the United States, they give you some minimal ability to survive, but they make sure that you don't become independent of them, and they make sure that all of your business has to go in a manner that they can monitor and control it. I believe, and I believe most political advisors and most political analysts would say that Iran is playing the exactly right game here by standing by its sovereignty, by pointing out that the United States is no longer in the position to swing its might around, especially with the situation in Ukraine, and this may provide Iran an opportunity to finally escape from what is in effect international blackmail by the United States.
Abbas Aslani, the Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, believes that the Vienna talks are becoming more complicated by the hour because the U.S. is actually refraining from making a political decision. Is Washington serious, in your opinion, or does it have ulterior motives regarding the revival of the deal?
Well, Americans, they have been, claiming to clinch a deal as soon as possible, and they have been demanding Iran and other parties to do so. But in action, what we have been seeing that they have been, protracting the process by somehow changing their messages, changing their stances, or at least, not being very active in giving the initiatives or proposals at the table. And this indicates that they have not been able to somehow contribute to the process as they were expected to. So as the time goes on, the negotiations can be more complicated, because there are other, developments happening in the world. And maybe one of the issues that we are seeing a Russian demand in the negotiations, which is another issue at the table, is due to the new developments that are evolving and are taking place in the world. So there is no guarantee that we won't have new developments or new situation in the region, globally. And that's why I think it can be more complicated. And in the course of the negotiations, not only we do not see any, good faith from the American side, but look what happened just recently, that Americans seized an Iranian ship, and this contradicts with what is said at the negotiating table. Exactly, they do the opposite thing that they are supposed to do. They are seizing Iranian ship, but in action they are supposed, and in practice they are supposed to, lift the sanctions. The words and the deeds do not agree. So, and that's why it is said that maybe the U.S. is not that much serious. And if they want to reach an agreement, First, they have to be ready to, to return to the full compliance with all terms of the nuclear deal. And their, actions must meet their words in practice as well.
And one last question for Mr. Bozich before we wrap up the show. How would you rate Europe's performance regarding the JCPOA and its revival? For example, their initial commitments, their stance on the U.S. abruptly leaving the deal, have the Europeans held up their end in all of this?
The best word to use to describe them in the English language is spineless. They've shown zero backbone, they've shown zero sovereignty, and they've shown zero solidarity with the entire concept of a fair-based negotiations towards a mutually acceptable agreement. I can say that the Europeans in this particular negotiations and in general have shown that they are merely just following instructions from Washington, and they have disgraced themselves in these talks. And I think that Iran has done an excellent job in presenting its case clearly and defending its stance and its sovereignty. If you stay the course, your results will be much, much better than if you cave in.
All right, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Journalist Abbas Aslani joining us from the Austrian capital, Vienna, and also thanks to journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bozich joining us from Belgrade, and a special thanks to you for staying with us on tonight's Spotlight. It's good night for now.
voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
The EU's hypocrisy seems boundless. The European Union funds research involving Israeli regime's police, despite admitting that it may be used for spying purposes. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by David Cronin, writer. This article is titled, EU admits teaming up with Israeli regime police enables mass surveillance. Stay tuned for more. The European Union funds research involving Israeli regime's police, despite admitting that it may be used for spying purposes. Over the past few years, a project named Roxanne has been examining how criminals can be identified with the aid of speech recognition technology and visual analysis. Material intended for public consumption presents the EU finance project costing $8 million as benign. However, serious ethical issues have been raised when it was discussed behind closed doors. Internal EU documents obtained under Freedom of Information rules confirm there is a risk that Roxanne's results will be used for mass surveillance. An ethics check on the project conducted during 2020 refers to plans that personal data will be shared between the EU and the Zionist regime. The data collected during the project will incorporate special categories such as details on the genetic traits, health, lifestyle, political opinion, religious or philosophical conviction of individuals, according to that paper. The surrounding questions have become even more pertinent since the ethics check was carried out. Painstaking investigations by human rights groups proved last year that the Zionist regime's Pegasus spyware is being used more widely than was previously known to monitor campaigners and journalists in various countries. The Zionist regime's police and its public security ministry are among the participants in Roxanne. A condition of their involvement is that all data they export to the EU should be collected lawfully. Providing assurances of legal behavior is apparently deemed sufficient for the purposes of EU ethics checks to demonstrate that privacy issues are being treated seriously. In the real world, an Israeli assurance is completely worthless. The Zionist regime's police are seeking new powers that would allow greater surveillance without requiring warrants. A key proposal is that cameras in public places could be used to match people's faces with details found on police databases. Such a recommendation should, in itself, disqualify the Zionist regime's police from Roxanne, which pays lip service to the principle of privacy awareness. There are, of course, numerous other reasons why the Zionist regime's police should not be benefiting from EU science grants. One major reason is that the Zionist regime's police are institutionally racist. A recent Human Rights Watch report on Lid, a city within The occupied Palestinian territories, also known as LAD, contains a vivid example of police racism. The report describes how police fire tear gas and stun grenades at a protest by Palestinian citizens of occupied territories in LAD last May. Yet, in some cases, when Jewish extremists attacked Palestinians in the same city that month, the police either stood by or failed to protect Palestinians from harm. The Zionist regime's police and public security ministry both have their headquarters in East Al-Quds, which has been under military occupation since 1967. Doing business with them should, by definition, be off-limits for the European Union, which is nominally committed to avoiding action that would lend the capture and colonization of East Al-Quds any legitimacy. There are strong indications that the Zionist regime has not been entirely candid with administrators in Brussels. Documents for Roxanne Project give an address inside the occupied territories as the official contact for the public security ministry. If Brussels officials consulted the ministry's website, they would learn that its main offices can be actually found on Clermont's Gano Street in East Al-Quds. The involvement of the Zionist regime's police and public security ministry in Roxanne and another EU-funded project called Law Train has sparked protest from the Palestine Solidarity Movement. More protest is needed. The Zionist regime's police and its public security ministry have been admitted into at least 8 other projects under Horizon 2020, the EU's current research fund. Among them are 2 border surveillance initiatives, Andromeda and Safe Shore. As border surveillance has become synonymous with cruelty toward refugees, questions must be asked about the precise role being played by the Zionist regime's racist police. A particularly troubling aspect of all this cooperation is that boasts made by the Zionist regime police are seemingly taken at face value. An EU-funded project called Shuttle is building a database of blood, gunshot residues, hair, and saliva. The Zionist regime's police force is taking part and will contribute its experience as a forensic expert and technological leader, according to Shuttle website. There is no acknowledgement that the Zionist regime is actually an expert in operation. By awarding research grants to the Zionist regime police, the EU is rewarding a force that detains Palestinian children, terrifies entire families by invading their homes, and opens fire on worshippers in Al-Quds Al-Aqsa Mosque. The EU's hypocrisy seems boundless. Shortly before Hesham Abu Hawash ended his hunger strike earlier this week, EU diplomats proclaimed themselves seriously concerned about his health. The diplomats were not concerned enough to demand that the EU stop cooperating with the Zionist regime's public security ministry, the regime's department overseeing the prisons where Abu Hawash and many other Palestinians are locked up without charge or trial. In December, an agreement was signed so that the Zionist regime can benefit from the EU's next research fund. Named Horizon Europe, the fund has an overall budget of approximately $110 billion. Predictably, the EU promoted the new agreement by celebrating how its cooperation with the Zionist regime has supposedly brought great advancements in medicine and environmental protection. Just as predictably, there was no mention that the cooperation is a cash cow for the Zionist regime's racist police.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.